Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Desk. Let's make our job more backbreaking by standing up.
Yeah. Well, at least the stand-up desk allegedly has plyometric advantages. I can't imagine what the alleged advantage of a round ball would be.
I don't know either, but you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com station. Halfway through 4 hours, Rick Tittle and Matt Kolsky will take you up until 9 o'clock. Jared Brown of the Niners Wire will join us in about 20 minutes. I think what it is, Matt, is it's obviously people need to justify their jobs, or they need to come up with new stuff. And there, listen, the technology is great. The other thing, too, is that if you watch any NFL game now, and this has been going on for years, no one wears any pads on their legs. They're just shiny pants, and they all go above the knee.
Right.
No one wears knee pads
never
in a sport where after every play, you're on your knees on the ground.
Which weird.
It's for speed. Nothing to slow you down. You're basically just playing with shoulder pads and a helmet now.
And the shoulder pads have shrunken to a ridiculous degree.
They're so much lighter. But you know what they do now? They go down your back. Because when I played, they were just on your shoulders. So if you got hit in the spine, you got a face mask in your spine.
Right. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, there was a company where they had this little thin net of rubber underneath your shoulder pads. And they just made that. And they called it Under Armour because it was under your shoulder pads. And then Under Armour started making.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's where it started.
Huh.
It was under your shoulder pads.
I like that. Also, I mean, I'm sure the technology has advanced to the point where some of the little pads today are just as effective as the big pads of old. But you're right. It's also like cups.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't get it, man.
The cups I had in the 70s, they would actually promote crotch injuries.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Then the karate cups we wear now. Let's do a whole show on junk. I'm sure people want to hear that.
Yeah. All the various man protective gear in professional sports.
All right. Getting back, you know what? I'm a little bit excited to see Josh Rosen, not just because he was such a polarizing guy in the draft. I don't think a lot of people doubted his talent. I think a lot of people were a little bit scared by the whole enfant terrible thing about him. And is he so much of a jerk that he's not worth dealing with? Because I have a feeling that there were a few teams that interviewed him and thought, I mean, that was the whole thing. Didn't the Niners say, we sat down with Aaron Rodgers and all he did was rip us and talk? Somebody was late and Aaron Rodgers, and they just thought, oh, this guy, he's ripping us. We're not drafting him. We'll draft Alex Smith. But on the other hand, people say, no, I want my quarterback to be a little bit of, a fried lobster.
In retrospect, you'd have rather had Aaron Rodgers than everyone else in that room in all likelihood.
And the Raiders passed on him the pick before, by the way.
Is football the sport, I guess baseball does this a lot too, where like insane things are used to make decisions the most? Stuff that just ultimately will have very little to do with what's actually going to happen?
I think the pressure in football is way beyond the other sports.
Because especially a quarterback.
You only get 16 tries.
Yeah.
And you got to chew on that loss for a week. And
that's true.
It's funny, when Bill Musgrave was the offensive coordinator for the Raiders, every week that I sat in this chair, he was either the biggest idiot who needs to be fired,
right,
or he was this innovative, genius. But that's the nature of this game. And that's why I love baseball, because as heartbreaking as that blown save was, you win the next two. That seemed like a month ago. That's why baseball season to me is the best, because it's your friend. It's with you every day. Football, we sit here, now what's going to happen? We got six more days. And then if you play on a Thursday night, then you got 9 whole days to chew on it.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's driving this sort of John Lynch fury I keep hearing over the last few days. last couple weeks, really, that, like, all of a sudden now, well, look at his draft record's terrible. It's Lynch's fault. He's the guy, but look how thin this roster is. And it's crazy. It's so, but I think it's just we have such limited stuff to talk about. And people look at a year now where not only do you always have limited stuff to talk about, but it feels like with Garoppolo out, it's just the stakes are that much lower. And it just feels like the rug of a promising season's been ripped out from under you if you're a Niner fan, and you're just spinning your head around looking for someone to blame. And I guess John Lynch is the easiest target in that respect because the roster is short on talent, but he's been here a year and a half. And first of all, we have no idea how good his drafts are yet because we don't know how good drafts are for at least 3 years, if not five or more. Mm-hmm. But also, to the extent that we do know, like, pretty good. I think pretty okay. And, like, he inherited the worst roster in the league with just nothing on it.
Right now, he has a Pro Bowl tight end that he drafted in the fifth round in George Kittle. If the Pro Bowl was tomorrow,
a quarterback who looked pretty good, who he drafted in the third round. He has, there's a bunch of guys. We like the early returns on Dante Pettis, do we not? Like, that looks like it could be a good pick as much as we know.
How about Warner?
Yes, people love Warner. Reuben Foster, decent value last year. Trent Taylor, reasonable value in the fifth round. A professional wide receiver. Adrian Colbert, your starting safety in the seventh round last year. Sure, it may turn out he's not great at drafting, but so far, I don't have any complaints.
It's mostly because people look at that first round. That's what they're doing.
It's a combination of Solomon Thomas getting being not so good yet. And then the second part is really it's you paid the quarterback. He looked and then he got hurt.
By the way, that sounds like a Yes album, Rug of a Promising Season.
Oh, thank you. It does sound like a Yes album. Or, you know, early Genesis.
That could be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Phil's involved.
Yeah.
Joshua Garnett was still Trent. So was Armstead.
Yep.
Buckner still was as well.
Yep.
And so, you know, everyone, the first round pick is always going to get a lot of attention. And, you know, to me, I've had this argument before that to me, once you pick in the fifth round, you're not in the dumpster, but these guys aren't super highly touted. Now, I've had people argue with me that the fifth round they still regard as a pretty high pick. I don't, because you've already gone through literally hundreds of players.
Yeah.
So to me, getting Kittle in the fifth round, but the thing is, every GM has to hit on those. If you don't hit at one, then you got to hit at 4, 5, 6.
Right.
And if you do, then it's going to equal out, like you were saying.
Yeah, and like you're saying, it's the fifth round. Kittle's a steal. He looks like a top level tight end.
Who knew he was faster than DBs?
Yeah, he's fast. He seems to have good hands.
I don't think he even knew that.
No, I agree with you. And you know, he might not be faster than most DBs, but even Trent Taylor, who I understand, grand scheme of things, Trent Taylor's done nothing in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But he looks like a guy who can have a 5 to 10 year career by catching the ball at the sticks every so often. And to get that in the fifth round, that's a pretty good scouting job.
By the way, Pro Football Focus, for those of you who like stats and modern stats and Excel spreadsheets, Kittle has a score of 90. He is the best tight end in the National Football League after 1 month of football. It's just a month. But that's not bad.
And that's at least what he's capable of, right?
Right.
It's not like he's had tremendous quarterback play turning him into a star. He's been making plays himself. And that's a fifth rounder from last year. So I just don't get the criticism of Lynch. This is a long-term project that he's at the beginning of. And if we have information to judge him, the worst you could grade him at this point is like a B or a B minus. That's the worst you could grade him.
And just think, Tittle, that's me. Kittle. Tittle is so great. Kittle, he sat behind for a couple of years a guy named Noah Fant at Iowa. But that's what I love too about college football, because the 18-year-old freshman could literally look completely different than the 21-year-old senior, you know, or junior.
Heck, the 21-year-old junior can look totally different than the 25-year-old NFL player.
Look at Kevin Durant in his Sonics jersey as a rook and now. And Kevin Durant is still under 30.
How crazy is that?
He's still under 30, right?
I think he just turned 30.
Did he just turn 30?
Either way, what have I been doing for the last 7 years?
I got to look it up now because I just... Oh, yeah, you're right. September 29th.
Just. That's my mom's birthday. Oh, happy birthday, Kev.
Happy birthday.
And mom?
He just turned. All right, so what we're going to do here, take a break. The calls are lining up. We're going to get more into the Niners with Jared Brown. He writes for Niners Wire. We are going to get back to the Raiders at the Chargers as well. Little Dubs, little Major League Baseball going on, whatever. The hot stove has begun in the Bay Area.
Oy.
I don't know how piping hot it is.
Lukewarm
just yet.
Stove.
It's a little bit, maybe it's the microwave.
The tepid stove.
The microwave at 7-Eleven. Let's just say that.
Okay.
It's about like that.
And might overheat if you're not careful.
Just open the end of that burrito and give it 60 seconds. Tittle and Kolsky, come on back, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Great to have you with us on a Saturday night. A little sports talk with you, 7:15 downtown San Francisco. 95.7 The Game, Rick Tittle on the mic with my buddy Matt Kolsky. Will be here until 9 o'clock. And we are very glad to be joined by Jared Brown, who writes for Niners Wire. And, Jared, before we get into what's coming up with the Cardinals this weekend, we're just having a little discussion about the fluke injury to Garoppolo. And as I said, as he's running out of bounds, you think, why would he go back in to hit that guy? And it's my answer is because he's a football player, you know, and it was a fluke. You usually just kind of don't stand there and get hit, and it was a little DB. So you're like, okay, I'll give you a little hit. It was kind of a fluke thing. So in other words, I'm saying is I'm not mad at him.
I think that's totally fair. He's a competitive guy, right? You don't get to the NFL without being an extreme competitor. And quite frankly, at the end of last year, fans were clapping their hands pretty loud for that kind of play from Jimmy Garoppolo, an ultra-competitive guy that doesn't want to give in, isn't going to step out of bounds, is going to fight for an extra yard. You can't predict when someone's going to get injured. So I agree. I'm not mad at him at all. And if anything, I appreciate a quarterback that's willing to kind of mix it up.
All right, let's dive into this injury situation. The offensive line, which I think you could say was maybe not super thin in terms of starters, but super thin in terms of depth. Three starting linemen on the injury report. Now, they did all practice Friday, but really any one of those guys being out looks like a huge disaster to me. So where are we at on Mike McGlinchey, Weston Richburg, and Joe Staley?
Yeah, definitely not good that the top, really probably the top three offensive linemen on that team from both a positional standpoint, the tackle is obviously incredibly necessary going against Arizona, but also, you know, the young player, savvy vet, bright veteran in the middle with Weston Richburg kind of making the calls at center. So not a good look if any of those dudes go out even briefly. It sounds like after practicing today that all three should be good to go for Sunday, but it's going to be a little bit of touch and go in terms of, you know, how easy they are to get right back into things. Obviously, going through practices, you know, with your teammates, you wonder how hard guys are going. On a Sunday, things look a little different, and it'll be interesting to see how those injuries potentially flare up. Does that mean that they can't play the entire game? I don't think so. I think they should be okay. However, you know, facing impressive pass rushers is a much different deal than some of the guys they're going against in practice.
You know, I think the Niners are going to fight tooth and nail to get every single win. And you'd say, well, yeah, that's what they do in the NFL. But I know some people might have suggested that the Niners, you know, they know this season is lost. And deep down, we kind of know it's lost. But you can't give up on an NFL season in week five. So is there anybody that you've talked to think there would be some sort of acquiescence at all?
I don't think so. Like you mentioned, you know, there's sort of this idea that, you know, playing worse or rather losing games gives you better draft positioning, and perhaps that's better in some regards. But even the draft, as we've seen, is an imperfect science. And having a top five pick doesn't guarantee that something's going to work out or that you're going to have an all pro. And if they need any example, they could look at Solomon Thomas on their own team, who's a number three overall pick. And while he's a solid player, has yet to sort of be that game changing impact player that you expect from a top five pick. So I would suggest that those that are saying, you know, hey, maybe losing is better, that really the idea is now, without Garoppolo, that you really need to see some of those younger players, aside from what Garoppolo was doing, you need to see those younger players step up. Guys like Trent Taylor, Kendrick Bourne, that sort of made a little noise at the end of last year with Garoppolo. You need to see their development continue to grow. Adrian Colbert on defense, Fred Warner on defense. So it's not a lost season in anyone's mind. They're still out there, like you mentioned, interested in fighting, you know, for every possible win. And more than anything, looking at this overall team building process as a multi-year thing. And while it would be nice to have Garoppolo sort of at the central focus of that, one player going down doesn't immediately scrap an entire season. And there's still, you know, 22 starters on the field that are trying to earn their paychecks as well.
If I can just speak briefly for the tanking crowd, a top five draft pick doesn't guarantee you anything, but it sure gives you a heck of a better chance at getting better talent, does it not?
It absolutely does. And right, fortunately, or rather unfortunately, the need that they have on this team, which is very obviously outside pass rushing help, this is the draft where you're going to find some elite players right at the top. So that might get interesting. We get to sort of the last quarter of the season, looking at the 49ers maybe jockeying for position a little bit so that they can get into the top five and have an opportunity to pick some of the premier edge players that should be coming out. Because after them, the drop is immense. And like you mentioned, while it's not a guarantee, having the pick of the top five, you're going to have at least an easier time of identifying the elite talent.
All right, so dialing back in on the talent they do have right now, I think everybody was pretty impressed with C.J. Beathard last week. And look, he looks like a professional quarterback, which is probably more than a lot of people thought he was coming into this season. Is the best case scenario with C.J. Beathard that he plays well enough that another team comes calling and offers you a, I don't know, second or third rounder for him?
I think that has to be the plan. And if that is, then in actuality, him getting some live game reps and putting stuff on film for other teams is phenomenal. And really this development from year one to year two, you know, by the end of his rookie contract, as they sort of look around and try to unload him before he steps somewhere else, I think this is a wonderful opportunity for them to sort of showcase him. He's with a bright offensive mind in Kyle Shanahan, who you know is going to scheme guys open. And Beathard's in a good position where as long as he can distribute the ball even fairly well, he should do okay in terms of putting up the statistics that teams are going to want to see hanging in there and running a really impressive, versatile offense. The guy just takes a ton of shots. And from a you know, sort of health perspective, not great. But from a look at what this guy can do, and like you mentioned, just the look of a professional quarterback, he has this sort of this poise and this logic and rationale that many guys sitting in a pocket like that and taking that kind of fire year one, year two, would not be able to hang in there like he has. So he's showing some traits and some skills that absolutely have to be identified around the league as a potential starter moving forward.
Tittle and Kolsky here, 95.7 The Game with Jared Brown of Niners Wire. A couple more questions for Jared. If you look at Josh Rosen in his first start, if it wasn't for five drops, he would have had a 300-yard game with three touchdown passes, which would have been a pretty good debut for a guy making his first start. When you look at a team that's 0-4, obviously it's easy to kind of write them off, but you can't write a team off when you only have one win yourself. How much do you think Rosen is going to get a little more leeway and a little more, I don't know, fishing line from the coaching staff now that he has another week with the first group?
I think they'll continue to ramp up what he does. Obviously, you know, this time last year, Josh Rosen was being discussed as the potential number one overall pick in the draft. And a quarterback that had all of the mental makeup that you wanted to see, could make any throw on the field, and sort of personality-wise began to sort of circulate some questions that maybe caused a little bit of a drop, but still, you know, top 15 overall pick, really impressive player. And last week hung in there with an Arizona Cardinals offensive line that's arguably one of the worst in the league. Not a ton of receiving talent in terms of play calling. Don't really love what they're doing, and yet he's able to produce. I absolutely believe that Arizona might kind of open up a little bit and give him some leeway. And like you mentioned, 0-4, what do you have to lose? Like, if Josh Rosen's willing to sit in the pocket and take some hits, go ahead and sling it. A team that's not going to make the playoffs might as well make it kind of fun.
You just said it. One of the worst offensive lines in football. Is this the week DeForest Buckner gets back in the sack column?
I really think so. And hopefully Robert Saleh can scheme him up in ways to be productive. The lack of outside help is really an issue because teams understand that provided they can protect inside, then quarterbacks can sidestep in pockets and they just move pockets laterally and avoid Buckner. Hopefully Saleh's got some tricks up his sleeve to get him back in the sack column because the reality is that the statistics are what people look at. And as much as DeForest Buckner might be making some noise, the lack of true sack numbers and statistics is going to always sort of hold him back from being discussed in the realms of Aaron Donald and some of those elite interior defensive linemen.
You know, a lot has been made about the Niners and the poor tackling, and almost every team has poor tackling nowadays with the new rules, and a lot of guys want to make sure they don't stick their head in there. They want to make sure that they don't get hurt. Some people might blame the coaching. They might blame Lynch for putting together a team of bad tacklers. To me, it's just it's a philosophy. You know, we're going to put 11 helmets on every ball carrier, no matter what. And it's just a matter of them buying in. Now, do you take it down to the linebacker coaches? Do you in any way? We had a guy earlier trying to blame Robert Saleh for the lack of tackling when I think it's his job to more scheme than to coach that type of thing. And can it be fixed?
I mean, first and foremost, these guys are professional football players. So if they haven't learned to tackle by now, I don't know that Robert Saleh can be the one that's expected to teach them. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that last year, and this is sort of the way that I like to think about it, and perhaps just a theory, but with players like Adrian Colbert and Reuben Foster, who last year put some impressive plays on film from sort of a highlight perspective, right? Really big hits, kind of those SportsCenter top 10 plays that people like to see. When they do that so often, and they did it fairly often both in their rookie season, there's a tendency of other players on the team to sort of watch and think that that becomes the expectation and that that becomes the norm. And so rather than rallying to the football, I think this team has a problem with sort of watching one another tackle. And instead of it being a six-on-one sort of endeavor, it really becomes a one-on-one endeavor where a guy's trying to make this, you know, highlight knockout blow, and instead it becomes a missed tackle, particularly in space. So it really is an issue sort of fundamentally of the entire defense swarming to the football, getting there with good leverage, funneling inside out or outside in based on field positioning and position. But overall, they've got to stop watching one another and just go make the play.
On the wide receiver front, I think obviously after outside pass rusher, that's a place where the Niners need as much help as any. They do, though, have a bunch of young guys that we haven't seen a ton of that seem to have some potential. So Victor Bolden getting activated this week. Richie James activated last week and showed us some interesting stuff in preseason. Do you think either of them get any run on, well, tomorrow now?
I think they do, and really I think they have to. Like you mentioned, a wide receiver could be seen as a position that needs just as much help as any on the team. And at some point, I think, you know, as wonderful as a veteran like Pierre Garçon is and as wonderful as Marquise Goodwin has been in terms of really stretching the field vertically, you've got to see what you have in these young guys and really start to look for what can we do from sort of a positional grouping standpoint as we move forward to find sort of the complementary pieces that make this offense go? Because as much as Shanahan can scheme guys open, the NFL is a playmaker's league. And as you look around at some of the best wide receivers in the league, those guys aren't necessarily being schemed open by their offensive play callers, but instead are just such dynamic talents that it doesn't really matter who's covering them, what the play is. They're able to be successful nonetheless. And I think the 49ers are sort of at this kind of crux where it's time to really give these young guys some legitimate run. Kendrick Bourne, Trent Taylor, Victor Bolden, as you mentioned, even Richie James, and ultimately what they have here, and not evaluate them from a number five, number four wide receiver on the roster, but are these guys legit number threes, number twos in starting sets, or is it time to really invest in that position?
You know, when you look at the Cardinals' defense, against the run, they're pretty terrible. They're okay against the pass, but offensively, they are the worst offense in all of football. They're 31st in rushing. They're 31st in passing. So, and you look at the weapons they have with Johnson and Fitz. If you are the Cardinals, what do you do to attack the 49ers? And then conversely, what are the Niners going to have to look at?
If I'm the Cardinals, I get Larry Fitzgerald in the slot early and often, and I give him sort of rub routes and intermediate sit routes that position him to play against some of the 49ers' weaker defensive backs, inexperienced defensive backs, allow Larry Fitzgerald to sort of get hot, feed him appropriately in terms of getting him the play purpose, or excuse me, getting him the ball purposefully on plays. And then I'd look to really try and maximize outside runs against the 49ers defense. While Reuben Foster and Fred Warner inside do have tremendous speed, the cornerbacks outside, there's just a lack of experience. And you know, sort of a prove it to me that you can stop it, and then otherwise we're going to keep coming at you. On the other side of the ball, from the 49ers on offense, the Cardinals' inside linebackers are some of the worst in the league. So this is a week that, provided Matt Breida's healthy, he should get, you know, at least 20 to 25 carries. And again, like I mentioned with the wide receivers, it's time to really see if this guy can be an every down sort of back, or if he's always the 10 to 15 touches sort of spell back week in and week out. Or is this the guy that we really want to commit to potentially for the next 2 to 3 years? That's another person that they're going to have to evaluate. The beauty is that this Cardinals team gives them a sort of a soft defense to face as they continue to do that.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but not only just a soft defense, that the strength they do have is edge pass rushers. So the more you can keep them off balance by running the ball, the better.
Absolutely. Their edge pass rushers are probably the one spot on the defense that the 49ers will struggle to match and definitely lack the same talent that they have. Chandler Jones is just an experienced, savvy veteran that's going to continue to give Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey fits if they're not totally healthy.
In your mind, okay, the Niners have to win this game. So they win this and they're 2-3. Do you start looking down the schedule and say, okay, I win here, maybe we can get to 9-7, maybe we can make a run at this wild card? Or in your mind, do you think, nah, we're done?
I really do think that, you know, 8-8, 9-7 is absolutely still a possibility. Sort of looking at the schedule in the beginning of the year, the first 3 or 4 weeks, the 49ers were going to face some of the best offenses that they're going to see all year, in terms of particularly at wide receiver. And so with inexperienced defensive backs, the Minnesota Vikings had the edge, the Kansas City Chiefs had the edge, the San Diego Chargers had the edge with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who was recently a top pick in the draft, and Phillip Rivers, who's a savvy vet. So now they're sort of rolling into, aside from the Rams, they're getting into the part of their schedule where the talent at wide receiver that they're going to face is going to diminish significantly. Now, the 49ers play at cornerback and safety need to elevate, but they're certainly going to face less talent than they have. I think 9-7 is absolutely still in the realm of possibility, but they're going to have to churn out 2 or 3 wins at a time, sort of start feeling good and turning the tide, because with the Rams in the division, I think you could pencil both of those games as a loss, and you want to sort of have some momentum as you're going into them so that it's not derailing a season when you lose those in-division games.
Especially given what you just said about the wide receiver talent they're facing. Why are we even entertaining the possibility of Richard Sherman playing this week? He's got calf problems with a leg that had Achilles reconstruction, and he's coming back early? Why?
That's a wonderful question. I think that the concern is that without him on the field, there's a real lack of veteran presence sort of in the entire defensive backfield. And at the same time, if you're looking long-term for this team, and I think Richard Sherman's looking long-term for his career as well, not thinking that this is a one-year deal with the 49ers, but that he's here for the next 2 or 3 years, and he still has sort of that confidence of being able to play in this league for a while. I agree that it seems awfully short-sighted to bring him back early. And again, in terms of evaluating talent, Greg Maven has the size that they're looking for in this scheme. He's a player that should get some run on defense in a legit entire game, not spot here and there, you know, series here and there. Sort of the rotation among defensive backs, in my opinion, is actually hindering the development of some of these guys in some cases. There's some of the best defensive backs in the NFL that lose on plays. And the idea is not that you come off the field. It's that you get right back on it and line up again and do it all over. So this sort of come and go as one guy's getting hot or cold, to me, is actually short-sighted in the development. And that goes along with bringing Richard Sherman back potentially early from an injury that, who's to say if this is really caused by his previous injury and whether this is something that's going to nag in probably looking at, you know, a couple weeks of letting this thing cool down against the Cardinals, especially a team that they likely won't need him for.
That's Jared Brown of the Niners Wire. You can read him there and follow him on Twitter at Jared Brown. That's J-E-R-O-D. Jared, thanks for your time and your insights, my man. We appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thanks, Jared.
Thank you. And the lines are open if you'd like to get in. We got John Paul Morosi talking a little baseball in about, about 8:20. So there's plenty of time to get in. Rick Tittle and Matt Kolsky with you here, 95.7 The Game. The number to call, 888-957-9570. Text line 95795. I want to get your visceral reaction. Do you know who's backing up Rosen on Sunday?
Mike, I don't think
Mike Glennon. As a Bears fan, I wanted to see what you how you would react.
Oh, whatever, man.
Do you blame him for taking that money?
No.
That's not his fault.
Of course not.
That's Pace's fault.
But it wasn't a bad deal.
It's just he changed his mind, had a chance to get Trubisky, so he went for it.
Exactly. And beyond that, even with Trubisky, it wasn't a bad deal. They cut him with virtually no penalty after one season. It was worth that to take a shot on a quarterback who actually, if you remember, there was a stretch in like his rookie year where Glennon looked like he might be okay.
For about four games.
That's right. But it's the NFL. You got to have a quarterback.
Yes,
if there's a potential availability and you think it's worth a shot, take a flyer on it. Why not?
By the way,
turns out he's not good.
Jared said San Diego Chargers, which I can completely forgive because I still say Baltimore Colts.
Oh, there is zero chance I will make it through the year without several San Diego Chargers references.
You know, we sort of wore these things as a badge of honor for the 13 years the Raiders were in L.A. Even their very last year in L.A., the ref said, first down, Oakland. We were like, aha! Like, those are the little things we were holding on to. Like, even 13 years later, they were still making that kind of mistake.
You know what's funny? I don't hear anyone say St. Louis Rams.
That didn't roll off the tongue.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Plus,
we have the San Diego Supercharger song in our heads. How can we forget?
Oh, man, the Satan song. Superchargers. Oh, that thing is so
one.
Horrifying. You know, it's funny because being a Raider fan sort of warped the whole way I looked at the United States. And it stayed that way for probably a good 30 years. Like Denver was this guy, Red Miller. This fat albino guy with red hair. He was a clown, and I hated the team. And then Don Coryell with his hooked nose looked like he was a general in the Africa Corps. And then the Steelers, the Franco Harris running out of bounds, a little wimp. And so I refused. This tells you how dumb I am. I refused to step foot in the city of San Diego or Denver or Pittsburgh. If you heard me a little while ago, I said San Diego's a beautiful city. So
beautiful.
I've changed now. And I also thought when
Denver,
I was
Denver, fantastic.
How about this? San Diego, now that there's no Chargers down there, there's no reason to hate it anymore. Petco Park, beautiful place.
Beautiful.
To watch baseball.
They're not threatening anybody.
Gas lamp. It's great. You got the Navy down there. You got the Midway.
It's a great place to spend like a weekend or a week.
It's a beach. It's a very cool. My brother went to San Diego State.
It's kind of like a bigger, less hippied out Santa Cruz.
With better weather.
Better weather, yeah, for sure. Warmer.
Getting back to, and by the way, coming up in the next segment, I want to talk about an article on the Las Vegas Review-Journal. It took two papers combined to get this story about how the Raiders might be a team without a home next year. That's a little cliffhanger for you coming up. But just to get back to Rosen again.
Yes.
Whenever you are a first-round pick as a quarterback in the NFL, unless it's a very rare situation where you have a guy like Brett Favre and you just can't pass. The Packers said Aaron Rodgers fell into our laps. We knew he wouldn't be there. We couldn't pass on him. And, of course, they get a Hall of Fame Super Bowl winning quarterback back-to-back, which hasn't happened since Montana and Young. You get Hall of Famers back-to-back.
Watch the Saints work, because I think Teddy Bridgewater has a chance to be really good. Maybe not Hall of Fame.
Really?
I think that's a brilliant move by them. You got a guy who's shown himself capable of being a Pro Bowl-level starting NFL quarterback, capable of, not guaranteed, and you got a succession plan for a 40-year-old Hall of Famer. I think it's brilliant.
You know, it's funny. The whole year when he was at Louisville, everyone said he'd be the number one overall pick. He ended up being the last pick of the first round, a couple picks before Derek Carr. But then again, we've gone through drafts. I remember doing my Heisman update, and Kyle Orton at Purdue was going to win, and Manti Te'o was going to be the number one overall pick.
Boy.
It's funny how things, from preseason rankings to where we end up. I think Bridgewater has capability of being a everyday NFL quarterback. I didn't see anything that made me think, Pro Bowler. So I'm interested.
Really?
I'm intrigued by that because I like the guy and I'm rooting for him. He almost had his leg literally amputated because the arteries got so screwed up.
No, I mean before that, that he showed.
No, okay. Obviously. You, right. Obviously, you meant that.
I wasn't talking about a preseason game with the Jets, just to be clear.
But I didn't really regard him that way. I don't think there were a lot of GMs that did either, but you saw something there.
I mean, I think his one full season of playing in Minnesota for a young guy without a ton of offensive talent around him. He was 23 at the time. 65% completion, 14 touchdown, 9 interceptions. Again, it's not spectacular, but he looked pretty darn good. That was a good football team.
Well, you think about how hard it is to find somebody to play quarterback.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Raiders went from Gannon to Carr before they found somebody that was really going to stick. I mean, it can be almost...
It is... Don't make me cite my quarterback life.
I've always said it is the hardest possible position to prognosticate from amateur to pro is the NFL quarterback. And you think about the Kurt Warners and the Tony Romos that nobody wanted from the number one overall picks that do work, like the Peyton Mannings. But for the most part, I've seen it in my life. If you're a first round pick as a quarterback, odds are you're not going to be a guy. It's a desperate move for teams that don't have a quarterback. What are we going to do? We have to take a kid. We have to take a kid now. So for
you're saying if you are a first round pick,
if you are a quarterback taken in the first round, the odds are against you of being a success.
Okay. I would say really, if you are a quarterback, full stop, the odds are against you because overwhelmingly you're better off being a first rounder than a fourth rounder.
Obviously.
But the point is no matter where you're drafted, it's a dicey proposition.
It's so hard to figure out who that guy is going to be. So for you, like in this last draft, my two favorite guys were Mayfield and Lamar Jackson. And call me crazy, but I loved watching Lamar Jackson play football. I liked his arm better than most people. I didn't know how it was going to translate, but I loved him. I like Mayfield's pluck.
I would not call you crazy. I would call you a fan of college production. Seems reasonable.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. And the thing was, I remember the last game, I think it was his bowl game. Well, Lamar Jackson was throwing some seeds. It's funny because I remember I saw Kaepernick play his last football game over at AT&T.
Yeah.
And
Foster Farms Bowl?
Yes. It was one of those. Emerald Nut Foster Farms. By the way, that bowl is now called the Red Box Bowl. The DVD.
No rental. Kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, good for them.
They just, I had Al Guido on my other show. He announced it. The Red Box Bowl.
Did you get any? I didn't get any cool DVD deals.
I did get the ability to loiter in front of 7-Eleven for an hour.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a gift in its own way.
So I got that going for me. All right. You know, we did take a break. We'll come back and we'd love your participation as well. 888-957-9570. Text line 95795. I'm Rick Tittle. He's Matt Kolsky. Come on back at 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Shouldn't play songs that are better than the show. Now I just want to sit back and listen to Jimmy. That's the great thing about an FM station. It just sounds so good. Rick Tittle and Matt Kolsky with you on a Saturday night. We'll take you until 9 o'clock. Coming up in a half hour, we'll be joined by John Paul Baseball. It'll be John Morosi from MLB Network. And the lines are open at 888-957-9570. Text line 95795. So the Raiders will be in Carson, California to take on the Los Angeles Chargers, Lance Allworth. That'll be on Sunday, Matt Kolsky. I'm Rick Tittle, by the way. There is a article in the Las Vegas Review Journal, and they're basically saying that the Raiders don't have a home next year. The Raiders had a, I know they had an agreement with the city of Oakland that they would do a 1-year lease this year, and then they would do a 1-year lease next year. Then there was some pontificating from some of the politicos in Oakland that they were going to put a lawsuit to try to recoup some of the money from the original Mount Davis deal back in 1995. And the Raiders say, if you do that, you can just rip up anything for next year. That lawsuit, to my knowledge, has not come forth yet, which would cost the city of Oakland around, I think, $3 million that the Raiders were going to pay had they stayed, plus all the, of course, job and tax revenue, everything else you're going to bring in for.
Unless they win.
Yes. So the question is, where could they go next year regardless? And Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, quote, "It's in our minds, but it's really in the back of our minds right now. We're really concerned about 2018, end quote.
Sure you are.
Now, Jason LeConfora, the CBS Sports Insider, he said a couple weeks ago that there were some very preliminary discussions with the city of San Diego. Now, I just have to say that if the Raiders play next year in San Diego, the universe will collapse and everyone's face will melt.
I can't think of something that would be a bigger FU to your fan base. And there have been some. They have been giving the finger to their fan base pretty consistently over the last year, 2 years, 3 years. That to play a season in San Diego rather than just work out one last one in Oakland would be the ultimate just middle finger in the eye.
And what you would do if you did care about those fans, obviously, is not move.
Yeah.
The other thing is would be to play at Levi's, which Jed York has gone out of his way to saying you're welcome to come down. And why wouldn't he? Because he would get to host eight more.
He still makes the concession money off of those games, I'm pretty sure.
Right. And I'm sure the Raiders for a fourth year in a row would go overseas. So he'd at least get seven games and the Raiders would have to pay rent and the Raider fans would go. Now, some people will say, well, the Raiders will still fill the games in San Diego because they have so many L.A. fans. But there's just something about...
That's not really the point.
It's not the point. It's to me like saying they're going to play a season in Denver.
Right.
Or they're going to play a season in Kansas City. It's so abhorrent in my mind. It'd be like saying, you know what? You know our stars and stripes? We're going to put a hammer and sickle right there in the middle of the stripes. You know, like, wait, what?
When the Bears... This is the best comparison I can make. When the Bears renovated Soldier Field, which frankly is not a good renovation, they played at Champaign.
Oh, they had
University of Illinois.
That's right.
On a crap field. Bad things happened on the field to the team as a result of playing at Illinois. If they had played in Green Bay for that year, I would not be a Bears fan anymore.
Right.
There's playing in Champaign was stupid and bad. Playing in Green Bay would have been mortally offensive to me.
What?
That's the difference.
What are they going to call the Raiders down there? Are they going to call them the Oakland Raiders for one more year? Are they going to call them the Las Vegas Raiders for a year early? Are they going to be the, I can't even say the three words together, the San Diego Blanks?
Can you imagine?
I can't. And you know what? This is, I've always said that, you know, being a Raider fan is in my DNA. And even though they've stabbed me in the heart now twice by moving, I'll always root for the team. If they go to San Diego, I'm out.
What if? Because wasn't there some talk of this? What if you got the Browns deal?
That'll never happen because the NFL does not love Oakland like it loves Cleveland.
Or maybe they just love the Raider brand enough that they want it in football constantly.
The Raider brand will always, they'll always have a home for it.
Yeah.
I know that there are people who wanted to sue for the name. And,
right.
And I thought that's kind of, a waste of time because we're not going to ever get another NBA or NFL team in Oakland. It's just never going to happen.
It's probably true.
Yeah.
Are you sure about NBA?
Yes. They have the Chase Center 8 miles away.
Yeah, it's too close. That's probably true.
Look at Seattle. They would get one first.
Seattle would get one first, but you usually expand with two. I think there's still other places.
Orange County thought they were getting the Kings. I could see a team going to the pond there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this. How about the Kansas?
But wouldn't that be the Clippers?
Well, the Kansas City Kings, when they moved to Sacramento in 85, I That was out of the blue, that Kansas City. Remember, they had the whole thing, if you build it, they will come. They built an arena, and the NHL and the NBA didn't come.
Yeah.
But they have a nice boat show there.
It's a great arena. Almost untouched.
They have the hemp show. You can wear it, and then you can smoke it and everything. Everything else you can
actually
have.
Actually, I'm thinking in Missouri they don't have that one, actually.
Do they have a Dickens fair, you think?
No, it's Mark Twain celebration, though. They definitely have that.
Yeah, they could have that.
Yeah, Samuel Clemens.
Maybe a Kit Carson type of Oregon Trail maybe thing. Everything kicked off from Independence, right?
You have died of dysentery. I like a 707 texter, just have them play at Cal. Sure. That'd be fine. I don't know how that works out, but again, there's plenty of places to play.
When I was a kid, the Raiders used to play a game there every year.
There you go.
And I hated that game. The reason I hated it was because we had to walk 100 miles. And when you're a little kid, every step is, carry me, Dad. No, you're too big. Then we got there, and it was roasting in the sun, and it was splintery benches.
Well, you won't have splintery benches anymore.
Well, Jeff Tedford got that beautiful press box and everything. He got that built, and then he got fired. But, that would make this the most sense to play at Strawberry Canyon. You would have the surreal feeling of actually seeing that stadium filled for the first time in 100 years.
That'd be cool. And it's a beautiful stadium.
Right. So, but the thing about San Diego, I think you'd have to go out of your way to say, how else can I stab and trot upon and vomit upon this fan base?
Yep.
What other indignity can I make them suffer?
That's exactly right. Here's an interesting question. Is the Inglewood building going to be ready next year?
No.
It's not. Okay.
Not that I thought they have one more year in Carson, don't they? The Chargers?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's why I asked. Because you could have gone to Carson before San Diego.
AT&T Park hosts football game, says the 650. You know what? When there was a time when A's fan, there was a question a few years ago that if the A's had to play somewhere else while the Coliseum was being refurbished for 2 or 3 years, would I be okay with AT&T Park? I said, absolutely. And he's like, no, I'd rather die. I'm like, while you're there, the Giants aren't playing.
That's right.
But it's the whole thing about it's a different phone area code. Be careful getting a tattoo, because I can tell you, growing up here, we were all the 415. Remember, Sir Mix-a-Lot, the Oakland Schizo? How do I know? Because 415 was the area code.
Yes.
Yes.
Just like Chicago and where I lived in Evanston, the 312.
By the way, the University of Evanston.
What?
Evansville. Wait, where did... I thought it was...
Evansville, Indiana. Evanston, Illinois.
Where's the
home of the Fighting Northwestern Wildcats?
Oh, okay. So, wait, where did the... Now I'm all confused.
There may very well be an Evansville University.
But the other night, I can't remember now. Forget it. There was a pitcher who was a first-round pick. I thought he was from Evansville. Evanston.
We'll have to look into that.
It's a good thing this is rehearsal and that we're not actually on the air right now.
No.
650 says, just when you think Oakland Raider fans have hit rock bottom, brace for going subterranean. Yes, we'll be down with the mole people. Hot magma all around
hot
us.
Hot magma.
The first time around when they left and I was a senior and it was in high school, it was such a horrible thing. And I looked at it as my brothers being held hostage. And I knew they would never move back. There were two families on my street that had Raiders season tickets that switched to the Niners, and I didn't blame them. They wanted to support a team. They wanted to tailgate. They wanted to go to NFL games, and they got in at the right time. The Niner dynasty was starting pretty much underway at that point. And so I kind of had to ask myself the question, what was I going to do this time around? There's no way I can look at that helmet and root against it. It's just too late for me. The days of medieval heraldry are gone with family crest. My basic family crest is that Raider shield. Every year from kindergarten on, my parents would go to Penny's and get these faux Letterman's jackets with the vinyl white sleeves.
Yeah.
And as soon as it would rain, they'd start cracking. But that was a tradition. And then every year for Christmas, we would get the onesie pajamas with Raider logo.
Oh,
yeah. 1968, 1969. So what am I supposed to do? All of a sudden hate that team? I will just say, if they go to San Diego, I'm just going to pretend the NFL doesn't exist, which will make for great radio. I'll pretend.
Hey, you know what? If they go to San Diego, you'll be able to pretend the Raiders don't exist.
Because they won't.
Basically.
Not in my mind. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and H2N, KGMZ San Francisco, radio.com station. If there's a Raider fan out there that would be fine with the San Diego move or not, let us know. 888-957-9570. And it's a poignant topic because they are playing the Chargers, who vacated Jack Murphy, Qualcomm, whatever you want to call it. And as I said, I went to a terrible Super Bowl there, and I was just down there a couple months ago to see a soccer game. There's nothing wrong with the place. In fact, the light rail stops right there. It's got massive parking. But the Raiders now, with Donald Penn on the IR, the kind of IR from which you can return, he's out. You think about Colton Miller, the first-round pick at one tackle. Now you got Brandon Parker, who was a third-round pick at a North Carolina A&T. He played a little bit last week as well. The interior of that line is still there, but the tackles are the ones that usually make the most money because they have to keep those edge rushers out of there.
And you got one this week in Melvin Ingram.
Your thoughts?
It's a decent test for them. Not the test it would be if Bosa was playing and you got two guys coming in like terrors, but I imagine you'll see Melvin Ingram lined up on both sides of the line this week, and you'll get a real good idea of just how capable Miller and Parker are right now. And that's not necessarily a referendum on their overall long-distance future, but it'll certainly give you an idea of how close you are to having a cheaper but still effective offensive line. I mean, that you have to do that at this point.
This isn't hockey. This isn't baseball where we're going to wait for you to develop. If you're a first-round pick, we realize that it probably won't be till year three when you'll start hitting your peak, but we don't have time.
No. We need you out there.
You're a first-round pick. You're starting. We need you right now. By the way, the text line, the 707, said, I hated those cheap.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.